The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Mike's Radio. We're open line today, so whatever's on your mind, by all means, do get in touch. You can text 166-177, WhatsApp on the same number, email studio at mikesradio.com, or call 66-1368. So any thoughts on what the Chief Minister had to say yesterday? Also, still that problem with apprenticeships on the Isle of Man, the difficulty of getting young people placed with companies on the Isle of Man. That time of year, of course. It's Wednesday the 23rd, that's what, 3 weeks tomorrow, I think, A-level results come out, the 14th of August, and a week later, GCSE on the 21st of August. So lots of people will be deciding on their future, and that may include an apprenticeship. And it seems there is some obstacle to getting apprenticeships on the Isle of Man. And also that minimum wage thing, it sounds fairly dry linking the minimum wage to median earnings, but the Chamber of Commerce says they welcome the reforms, but it may be just pricing some companies out of the labour market. Fewer workers. Anyway, any thoughts on it? By all means, do get in touch. First today, we've got Thurston on Man in Line. Hi, Thurston.
Hi, Andy. Yeah, I was on the phone for just under an hour yesterday trying to get through to the Chief Minister. So anyway, I'm glad to get through now anyway. And what I was hoping to ask the Chief Minister was, I was going to say to him, do you think it is right that a foreign power should attempt to sway the Tynwald policy? Because MLC Gary Cluett stated in last week's sitting that they received a threatening letter saying they should not debate Joni Farragher's motion concerning international law and discrediting Gary Cluett and Joni Farragher.
Okay, and I'm not familiar with that. What was the letter about and who sent it?
We don't know who sent it. I don't know who sent it. We're not allowed, it seems we're not allowed to know who sent it. So that's all I know about the letter.
Right, okay.
Gary Cluett, MLC, stated in last week's sitting and Joni Farragher's debate that they received a threatening letter.
Okay, I mean, was this just an odd bod? Was this just, you know, or was this an official letter from an official organisation?
I think it was an official organisation.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. And they were what, instructing them not to debate on what grounds?
I don't know. I don't know. Unless we actually get to see the letter,
right.
I can't give you more details.
Okay.
Really.
And what do you think's behind this?
Well, I assume it's the war against Palestine.
Right. Okay.
Or between Palestine and whatever. Yeah. But, I mean, interestingly enough, Jersey, yesterday, the Chief Minister of Jersey issued a statement urging the government to take action to stop the genocide
in
Palestine.
So, and what do you think, I mean, what do you think we on the Isle of Man can do?
Well, there's not a lot anyone can do, really. I mean, it's all a bit hopeless. If you look at what Amnesty International has to say about it, they give a few pointers, you know.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, you've made your point. I appreciate that, Thurston, and we'll see what happens. And I'd love to hear more about that particular letter. I suppose everybody would as well if we're being threatened by somebody. Thanks for calling, Thurston.
Thanks, Andy.
Good to hear from you. And Eddie's with us now. Hi, Eddie.
Hi, Andy. You all right, mate?
Yeah, fine. Thanks.
Good. Nice day. I'll second what your last caller said. I waited all the show yesterday, right from the beginning I got on, and nothing. And if I go back to Monday, your very last caller on Monday also said to you, the show should be 2 hours, not one. Am I right in saying it used to be 2 hours?
Never while I've done it.
No, but no. I think it was originally, yeah. But
I think it used to be 2 hours, but they played music and everything in between. We have an hour of everybody just chatting.
Yep. To plug Max Radio, it is probably one of the most popular shows from what I gather, your show, The Man in Line. And I do think, and I've said it over and over again, when you've got somebody important on, which yesterday proved, should be 2 hours. Do you not think? Maybe you could ask Alex Brindley to extend it when there's somebody important.
I'll pass the comments up the line, but that decision's made by people far more important than I am.
Anyway, you're all important. And also, the other point I want to make about that is we should have some say because we actually give a lot of money towards Max Radio taxpayers. Am I right? Yep, dead right. Yep. What I was going to ask Alf yesterday, I'll do it today because he's bound to be listening to see what the reaction was for yesterday. But I was going to talk about his road shows. I attended 2 of them this year, and I attended 3 of them last year. This year particularly, I got 2 really good natters with him and everything. But I also was stood close by him when other people were talking because, you've got to listen, haven't you? That's what the whole thing is about, listening to the people, which is how they call it, the listening roadshow, isn't it? And one thing that struck me really, really powerful is that the majority of everybody does not want to stay in the agreement of net zero. I heard it over and over and again at Castle Rushen. I heard it over and over again at Peel. And last year I heard it over and over again at all 3, including the Ramsey one, which I went. When I was actually talking to Alf, I was saying that sometimes, if you get things wrong, it's not bad to sort of hold your hands up and admit that it's wrong. And we all seem to think out here at the moment that this plan, the island plan, is not a good one. So why can't we just scrap the damn thing altogether? I mean, net zero, for instance, everywhere else in the world is ignoring it. I think I've stated over and over again, the water that we swim in out here travels all around the world. The air we breathe travels all around the world. So no matter what we do, it's not going to make a ha'porth of difference. In fact, I'll give you the figure of that. It's 0.08%. Right, let's scrap it. It's costing us a fortune, and it's also letting us fall behind everywhere else. We need, you've had so many people say, drill for the gas. There's so many people out here are suspicious about the way that was dealt with. We know we don't want the wind farm, and that looks as though it's going to be scrapped anyway. So go to what I said 6-7 months ago and prior to that and prior to that. Look at all the ways, not just one. They've gone down one dead narrow street here with the wind farms. Look at everything else. Water, the sea, hydro, you name it, geothermal, nuclear. Let's start again from fresh. Let's scrap the whole idea and start again.
Now, the people who disagree with you normally send me emails. They never come on the air. And they say, well, the only people who ever say they're against are the people who come on Man in Line. The people who agree with the wind turbines and everything never bother phoning Man in Line because, well, they don't like phoning Man in Line. It's just that you only get people who phone in because they're against it, and the people who are for it don't bother phoning in. What would you say to that?
Well, I say exactly the same as I've said right the way through. I didn't know whether it was for it or against it right at the very beginning when it was suggested. But I've taken the time to actually think, study, find out for myself what it consists of. And I've said again and again, I can't find anywhere in the world other than the the likes of the people who produce the damn things, who are never going to tell you the truth. I can't find anywhere where it's done them any good, any cheaper electricity.
Yeah.
It's not 7 days a week. It's intermittent. We've had numerous people. Some of these ones who don't want to come on can't give an alternative answer. I mean, I would love to I'm a listener. You know that.
And well, they think the decision's been made. They think the decision's been made, and that's it, and we should just move on.
Yeah, well, I've got a bit of inside information. I'm not going to say where it comes from, but it is a minister, and it's going to get scrapped. They're going to put it off, this government, altogether, because a lot of them think they won't get back in again.
Right.
Right, okay. Now, that, I mean, I could quote the name, but I'm not going to.
No, please don't.
It would be really, really, really stupid, wouldn't
okay.
it?
Okay.
But I know.
Yeah, but just one thing I want to say. When you say everybody's scrapping net zero, that's not strictly true. I mean, the European Green Deal is still going on. The European Commission are still, that they're going hell for leather in Europe in that, and they've built lots and lots of wind turbines.
Yeah, well, all right, Andy, if you say that. Just look at the countries who you were saying that. All them European countries now, including Germany, France, Spain, everywhere, they're opening minds again. So how can that be a genuine answer?
Well,
it's
there we
not
are.
Not true.
No, that is true.
And
that
the
they are opening coal mines.
Yeah, and the Baltics, right? Kanya Atcher, something that BBC lady... She has produced a program recently, the Baltics. Every 100 yards, there's a bobbing, whatever you call them, these oil things. They are opening everywhere. And you can go for over, I think it's 2,100 miles all the way along the Baltics. And they have discovered that they've got the rare earth minerals, oil and gas. And what they're doing, they're going ahead with it.
Yeah.
So there is no green agenda anywhere in the world now.
Okay. All right, Eddie, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling today.
Pleasure, Andy.
Okay, now it's 18 minutes past 12. David's with us now. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. I sent you the thing from the DOI regarding abandoned vehicles or vehicles which they do an assessment on where they think it needs to be either removed or they notify the person. So that should give us some satisfaction now. We've got a definitive answer regarding if people have got abandoned vehicles lying in their areas, their streets, camper vans blocking out daylight from terraced houses and so forth. We can use that now to get it actioned. I was going to say, the best thing that was said yesterday, and it's going to be your blooper for this next season, Christmas time, is when somebody emailed in and said, have you made it up with Mr. Hooper? And there was a pause, remember?
Yes.
And he said no. That was absolutely bob on as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you have to admire his honesty.
Oh, God, you've got to do that. But let's get back to the apprentices. Shameful from this government. Absolutely shameful. I bet you haven't got an answer yet back from education or Starship Enterprise, the Enterprise scheme like that. But what are the solutions? Yeah, people are not going to employ people if they're not going to get some incentive to bring on apprentices. You don't get, well, I say you don't get nothing out of them for a year. They're probably learning all the time. They're probably making tea, sweeping the floors, like I used to do donkeys years ago. But then you get into the being a tradesman. And why don't they look at some brain boxes in there? Look at, why don't we give them, and I've got to give it to that lady too, who said she's going to fund her own son to give him a trade.
Yeah.
That's shameful, really, that the government would allow that to happen. But why don't we put some, like, a tax, 0-8 tax on them? Or if a family does it, they give them some incentive, national insurance contributions, give them a credit. You know, there's always something you can actually do if you want. We're going to be, in a few years now, no tradesmen at all. We're going to need them all over the place, aren't we?
Well, the thing is, somebody famous once, years and years ago, said the mark of any civilization is the quality of their plumbing. And that's, everybody needs plumbers. Bluntly, everybody needs plumbers. And if you don't have enough plumbers, you are because you know about plumbers. So you've got to have plumbers. And if we're not training enough plumbers, we're going to have to import plumbers. And surely that's not good for us.
No, and then we get into an issue then to do with important. And just remember, there's still an old act that says you've got to be registered with the Isle of Man Water Authority on there. You've got to be on their registered list to actually interfere with the water supply. It's one of those mandatory things you have to do because you can't contaminate things.
Yeah.
Never mind if you go down the road of electricity and stuff like that. You know, you're in heaven before you know, don't you? If you're not doing it right all the time. I just wonder, and I wonder whether you should have somebody from industry on just to say to how many government employees are there? We got apprentices. Do we have them at the DOI? Do mechanics? Do we have electricians there? Do we have a plumber? God bless the Corpy. They advertised some time ago for a painter and decorator to get things done. When you need the work done, you just can't get a contractor to give you a quote, and they're not going to want top and safety jobs, are they? And that's my thing for today.
Okay, all right, appreciate it. Thanks, David.
I support the wind farms too, but offshore, off Mackled, the ones that they're with Ofsted, which is partnered in with, no matter what the people say about their finances and stuff like that, something's got to happen, isn't it? You look at all these schemes that come about, and 9 times out of 10, geothermal's down the pan. Tidal could be an issue. We could do something like that. But is there anybody moving forward on these things? No.
No, we haven't heard.
No inspiration at all.
Okay, thanks.
Ciao, boy.
Cheers, Nat. Well, if anybody from Ofsted wants to hop on the phone and tell us what's happening with the offshore wind farm, and we'd be happy to. And remember, yesterday the Chief Minister did say that offshore wind farm is too near, or they said it's too near where the Kroger gas would be, so they kind of interfere with each other. Or certainly it may be down to insurance in the end as to who guarantees what to the other. Excuse me, but we'll see. Apprentice plumbers, says Paul 280. My plumbing company is always in the top 5 positions in the online directory, in the yellow pages, on Facebook and Google Maps. I've not had a single call, text, email or CV letter asking if we're taking an apprentice for this year's course. So they need to try harder instead of relying on the training centre or asking parents to find a job for them. Sadly, due to the current ridiculous funding from the government, we probably won't take another apprentice on again. Robert's with us now. Hi, Robert.
Hi, it was nice to hear David Quirk just before. He sounds like he's had a bit of a revelation or a realisation moment about what's happening with the apprentices, and I appreciate his comments.
Okay.
What I wanted to talk about is how many years have we had of this government at the moment?
What is it? 4, 3? Seems like for ages. 4,
and where are we up to on our 4-year targets for public sector housing?
Well, we've not heard.
Well, that's not good enough. And in terms of where we're up to, I think there are brownfield sites that need to be developed in Douglas, and we're just not hearing anything from Devon Watson or the Douglas Corporation about what they're going to do about it. So I want to know.
So where do you think they should build?
Well, there are spaces around that are brownfield sites that are up for debate because the 25-year lease has gone on a few of them. So they should be able to develop in between the lots. You know, it's Fontaine's DC and the lots. So within that, they've got the scope to develop. They've already developed a place up. What's that place up? Is it Westmoreland Road Avenue or something? I can't remember. It's one of them field things anyway.
Yeah.
But they've got other places that they can have a look at, and there's more intelligence in those fields. So people need to have a look at the brownfield sites and seeing what they're doing with them than there is at the moment going round in government. So I want to know what's happening, and they just don't seem to be telling us. So okay. We'd like an announcement.
Please. All right. Brilliant. Thanks, Robert.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers. Bye. Now. Let's go to... Oh, it's Bonzo's with us now. Hi, Bonzo.
Hello there. Yes. Listening to Eddie and, who seems to be stuck on repeat a bit and still looking down the wrong end of the telescope at everything. Busy talking about, we don't want this, we don't want that, we want a bit. Who are this we? Oh, yes, the Fleco Chamber, a bunch of people who go along to a lot of these meetings in order to shout loudly their various opinions, which they've managed to garner from some places in bits and pieces and from other obscure parts of the internet, rather than actually thinking about the problem. I won't go into the huge gamut about climate damage, because that's what it is, climate damage. The term climate change was something invented by the Bush administration in order to play down the problem and make it look like it was something that you could put a Band-Aid on and it would go away. What we have is climate damage, and what we can see all around the world is that the climate is now becoming more energetic and more hostile. And so you have floods, and you have typhoons, and you have droughts, and you have intolerable heat waves. Iran, for example, had to declare a public holiday yesterday. And everyone down tools and essentially hide in the shade because the temperature exceeded 50 degrees. The people who died in a shopping mall in Iraq recently, who were sheltering there from the heat, because again, that place is air conditioned and it was 50 degrees heat outside, so you weren't going to last that long if you were going to hang around in that. So besides all that, and whatever the International Court of Justice says today about the liability of nations regarding climate damage, they're putting their decision on a judgment out today. And I think they're just in the process of doing it. So we shall hear what they have to say. That's in answer to an action that was brought by the island nation of Vanuatu, who, of course, are rapidly disappearing under the rising sea levels, which are part of climate damage. But when we come to our local situation, firstly, the wind farm, Eerie Stain, which, of course, Eddie and his chums vociferously oppose. I wonder how much of their vociferous opposition is that Manx utilities haven't offered them sufficiently large checks as compensation for having the wind farm anywhere near them. I dare say that if the right amount of money was written on the right amount of paper, I'm sure you'd probably find their opposition to these things melt away, rather. And the idea that, oh, the cost is inflating, yes, there is such a thing as inflation, the cost is going up. And one of the reasons why the cost is going up is because they are making the costs go up with their obstruction. They are forcing more assessments, more complicated planning process, and that drives up the cost. In the same way as in the UK, building HS2, that's why it cost £100 billion, and it hasn't even got to Birmingham. You had £1 billion back tunnel and such absurdities, because, of course, the HS2 line went through all prime Conservative seats full of lots of people who wanted to say nimby, nimby, nimby very, very loudly, and they were very able to manipulate the planning system. When it comes to Ørsted, of course, on offshore and Kroger is fool's gold. It's been fool's gold for years, but of course, everyone wants to push it, including people like Mark, who phone you. I'm not quite sure whether this is the case, but some people put to me that Mark is in fact Mark Robertshaw, son of Chris Robertshaw, and Mark Robertshaw, of course, was one of the financial participants in Kroger. So perhaps he might like to explain next time he's on whether he had an interest in Prager or not. Any gas field that might be there can actually, as far as I remember, coexist with the wind farm. There may be some problems on making that happen, but there is, I think, provision for that. As for the wind farm, the offshore wind farm, of course, it's dependent, or highly dependent, on Isles of Man being within the contracts for difference regime. And ALF, I'm afraid, still hasn't secured that. And that needs to be the absolute primary thing in relations with the UK.
As you say, that's a political hurdle that we don't know whether has been surmounted yet, whether or not, bluntly, the UK government would give discounts and would allow this to happen for something that emanates from a foreign base or from a foreign country, from somewhere that's not the UK. That's never happened before.
Well, Well, here we get to the point of, is it a foreign country or is it not?
Well, it's not the UK.
Well, we're not the UK, but we are still within the Crown remit, as indeed Jersey or Guernsey would be with a similar situation. So, and indeed, of course, this area, had it not been for our purchase of the territorial seas, had been Crown estates and would have been sold in the auction to wind farms anyway. But it pays the UK in their energy policy to have that expansion, because there's only so much of the Irish Sea that you can put a wind farm in, and they're kind of running out of places to put them. So the idea that it should be essentially a bolt-on to the Walney wind farm, which we can see off Mackold and coming from Barrow, that is, of course, the reason why it's attractive to Ørsted to do it. So it's not an insurmountable problem. It's just a simple issue of politics and having enough leverage at the right level in order to do that, and having people in external relations who were old Tory apparatchiks of Theresa May's in Number 10. That's not going to get you through the door.
Mm. Okay. All right. All right, Bonzo. Thanks for that. By the way, I have no idea who the Mark was that called, so we're assuming that it wasn't the purse you say it was. So I don't know. I don't know anything about that. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thanks,
right,
Bonzo.
Bye.
Thanks. And let's get to Howard, who's with us now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. Yeah, just listening. I'm just one of the ignorant plebs that live in the Isle of Man. I've been here all my life. The uneducated Manxman that Bonzo refers to all the time, who is not allowed an opinion. Eddie is fully entitled to his opinion, as he is a human being, a taxpayer, and a person just like Bonzo living on the island. And he is perfectly entitled. Bonzo is a self-opinionated, arrogant person. And I find him extremely objectionable on the radio at times. But that's not what I come on for. When Eddie was on earlier on, he mentioned that they should just stop the net zero.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, the genie's out of the bottle. And to do that, the government say tomorrow, in January next year, we're going to cancel the net zero and we're going back to what we were. There'll be a queue a mile long of people waiting to sue the government, and because of work they've done, work that's in hand, systems they've got to change, like fitting various other different types of heating apart from gas and oil. So it's one of these things that's going to be extremely difficult to change, but was extremely easy to introduce. It was just a piece of legislation, but to undo that knot, then it's going to be very, very difficult and an expensive exercise. And there's only one lot of money out there, and again, it's the taxpayers' money who will be bled. So I agree with Eddie. The wind farm for three turbines like that it's a waste of money. And if they're going to have it, put it out to sea. But to undo that net zero, which is 2050, I think, zero, boink, it's going to be a very, very expensive exercise.
Well, so, at the moment, we don't, I mean, with where Ørsted's concerned, whenever we ask, you know, how much we're into this for, you know, are we going to be quids in or will we be left with a bill? Is our electricity going to be less or more than 29p per kilowatt hour? No, but answer comes there none. Nobody tells us what the benefit of Ørsted is, apart from being associated with a big company. You know, yeah. We don't actually know what's in it for us. And you would have thought the government would put that front and centre, apart from saying we're pursuing a net zero agenda, what's in it for us? Who's are exactly. we going to be left with a bill, or will we have something we can put towards the treasury?
Well, when the wind turbines, etc., first introduced, and I think it was in Cameron's days, there was a huge subsidy to these to introduce them and bring them online. And gradually that got whittled away to virtually nothing. And now the companies that are operating these wind farms are, I wouldn't say in dire straits, but they're feeling the pinch. And it wasn't as profitable once the subsidies were taken away as they thought they were going to be for the rest of their days. So what, we're talking 29 pence a unit for our electricity. What are the Manx government going to be paying the power turbines out to sea? Will it cancel out what any rent they're going to get for the land?
Well, we don't know at the moment, and presumably they're in discussion. But if it's going to be millions, if it's going to be billions, surely that's a good news story that they should tell us.
It should be, yes. Yes, it should be. And you think Good News Week. Silence. Well, I'm always suspicious of anybody that stays silent like that because, well, there's something hidden underneath that they're not wanting to tell you until something worth shouting the joyous news comes out, and there doesn't seem to be anything coming out.
Okay.
And as I said before there, this genie is out of the bottle now, and he's going to be extremely difficult to put back in.
Okay. All right.
Well, one thing that I read last night, and I heard somebody mention Guernsey, not this First Minister that's down at Guernsey at the moment, there's a chap that was First Minister, and he put himself back up again, was not re-elected. He has been investigated now on various cases. He's been investigated by the police. So have our government got any irons in any fires down in Guernsey that could have their fingers burned?
Okay. All right. Howard, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling today.
Take care. Bye now.
Okay. 21 minutes before one. Phil dropped me a note. Well said, Bonzo. I consider Bonzo as the voice of reason. The good point is it's just a small group of people who ring in and speak on your show who are against the onshore wind farm. Thank you, Phil. So what happens to the people who are pro-wind farm? Do they just sit in the corner and not phone? Or do they assume that if there is an argument, that they've won the argument? I don't know. What do you think?
Hello, this is Doug Farragher. In conjunction with Manx Radio, I'd like to invite you to join us and learn something about our native Gaelic tongue, the language of man.
All right, Paul. You're looking relaxed. You finally booked that trip.
Yep. Used some of the savings I locked in with Guernsey's Bank Skipton last year. Great interest rate, and they made it so easy.
Oh, Skipton. I've been meaning to sort mine.
Do it. You'll get proper customer service, too.
With market-leading savings rates and service that puts people first, Skipton International is here to help you feel secure, whatever you're saving for. For details on all of Skipton's savings products, call 01481 730 730 or visit skiptoninternational.com today. Skipton International is licensed to take deposits by the GFSC and is a participant in the Guernsey Banking Deposit Compensation Scheme, cdcs.gg.
Discover your dream home in Andreas with Kell Developments Limited. Their quality new build 2, 3 and 4 bedroom properties offer countryside living with amazing views just 5 minutes from Ramsey. These spacious homes are built for modern energy efficient living with ground floor underfloor heating and air source heat pumps. Plus contemporary kitchens, beautiful bathrooms, landscaped exteriors and more. Reserve yours now. Kell Developments Limited, Oatlands Road, Andreas. Island living redefined.
On the 10th of September, the Villa Gaiety is going back to Bacharach. A dazzling tribute to the 20th century's best love songwriter. Fall in love again with the timeless music of Burt Bacharach and experience his greatest musical masterpieces performed live by incredible West End vocalists and the sensational Magic Moments Orchestra. Make sure you don't miss out. Book your tickets online now at villagaiety.com. Back to Bacharach at the Villa Gaiety. Brought to you by Mowgli Events.
As we head towards Manx Grand Prix 2025, the Journey to a Dream podcast has been talking to some of this year's newcomers, finding out how they're preparing.
If I could get the lap time that I can get on the game around here, that'd be brilliant.
Where they work on their bikes.
I actually keep my bike in the kitchen. Like I said, my wife's very chill.
Why we don't need to worry if it'll rain.
2 years in a row, I've done the Northwest. 2 years in a row, we've all been sunburnt. Come to the Southern, I've burnt my nose, so I'm going to bring the weather. I'm lucky for it, so I'll bring it.
And also hearing from the next generation of racers. Where do you like riding your bike?
Everywhere.
That's Journey to a Dream, brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance, available to download now on the Manx Radio Motorsport website or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Sue's on now. Hi, Sue.
Hi, good afternoon. I'd just like to say that I'm absolutely disgusted that the government are stopping all these apprentices from young lads, or probably women as well now, on the island. Is this their second attempt of getting rid of Manx people? Because the first one was building a massive big hospital, which they knew there was no staff there for, and they would have to bring in from the other side of the world, and making the place what it is today, completely packed, no housing, you know, no nothing already. Now, stopping people becoming plumbers, electricians, joiners, that young lads that are fit and ready to go to work, and would that would, you know, serve them for their life in one of those apprenticeships, they're stopping them doing. Now, why are they stopping them doing that? And two, how many more people are they going to bring in when we haven't got plumbers, joiners, electricians, etc.?
Who is running this place? Why do you think the government? They say there are some apprenticeships, but it just seems to be very difficult to get one.
Yes. So why is there not more? Especially, there's probably young Manx and non-Manx here now that are old enough to take these apprenticeships to stay on the island instead of going into on a rubbish job or you know, a supermarket job or even on the dole, because they can't do an apprenticeship that they want to do.
Well, I mean, being a tradesman is a fantastic job. So, I mean, being a chippy or being a plumber, being a plasterer and stuff like that. But let's face it, they always talk about university. Not everybody wants university. Not everybody wants higher and further education.
No. Well, that's it, isn't it? So, you know, why are they doing it when they know what they're doing?
Okay. All right. Appreciate it, Sue. Thanks for calling us today. And Kevin's on. Kevin's been waiting very patiently. Hi, Kevin.
Oh, hi, Andy. Thanks. Yeah, I've got a couple of points to mention, actually. First one about the apprenticeships. You know, I was speaking a few days ago. I don't know whether Juliette ever came back to us on the problem with the certification. I know she set up the scheme of training for the plumbers and gas engineers, but nothing for the electrical side. I'm actually speaking to a chap from one of the competent person schemes next month about this issue, about the sort of training and CPD for electricians. But it is a problem trying to get an apprenticeship. I was very lucky about 20 years ago, and I got, I retrained, but it is very difficult, and it's become more difficult because of the spiralling costs of running a small business and taking on apprenticeships. And I think this isn't just sort of for the Isle of Man, it's also for the UK. And I think the UK, I think it was Mr. Blunkett many years ago, wanted everybody to go to university. And of course, he forgot about apprenticeships. So I think it's a nationwide issue on the apprenticeship schemes. But certainly, I would be very interested in, on what Mrs. Edge has to say about that, because I think she's forgotten about half of the trades out there.
Right.
Net zero. Is something I was speaking about earlier. I'm not anti net zero. I'm not anti wind turbines. But I think I'm listening very carefully to Eddie at the top of the show. Unfortunately, I think there's a lot of misconceptions about it. I think the financing behind any green initiative and public capital project is extremely complicated. And I think did you mention the 29 pence per kilowatt hour was that the magic number? Was it that was bandied around?
And I urge everybody to keep their eye on this. We pay about give or take 29p per kilowatt hour, and if we're going towards this green future, I would say, and Laurie Hooper said this on this show a couple of years ago, if we offer everybody electricity at 10p per kilowatt hour, people would rush towards it. But nobody's saying how much it's going to cost in the future.
Yeah.
We already pay a lot of money for our electricity.
We do. I mean, the cost per kilowatt hour tends to be a little bit lower in the UK, but they have a higher standing charge. Now, we tend to have a lower standing charge, and I know Manx Utilities just run a service. They just basically wash their face on the services they provide. They don't make much profit at all. But once we get into a big capital project and the financing behind it is complex, you've got PFIs, contracts for difference, your kilowatt hour price would be, I would say, a lot higher than 29p per kilowatt hour in the early days until you sort of hit a payback point, and also a lot of that energy will be sold on the grid.
Yeah.
Now, Manx Utilities already import green energy, because Manx Utilities buying energy with a green certificate or a carbon green certificate, so they already do buying a certain amount of energy. It's green, but it's very expensive. And I think the problem is worldwide, and BP Oil have opted out a little bit of net zero because they have realised that the shareholders and the board have realised on BP. That once net zero starts costing shareholders money, then people tend to get a bit twitchy about it. And this is the problem where you're at with any green initiative, that as soon as it starts costing people money, which it will do in the short term, people start to ask questions.
Yeah. Well, I mean, genuinely, people are going to say, everybody, let's face it, it's human nature. People will think, what's in this for me? And the notion of net zero is way out there. It's not something that affects us on a day-to-day basis. We don't get heat waves. We don't get floods. We don't get earthquakes.
Yeah.
We don't get seismic shifts. Nothing really happens in terms of the weather. Mm. It gets a bit warm sometimes. But so everybody will wonder how it's going to affect their pockets.
Yeah, I mean, we do. I mean, I'd say I'm not anti-net zero. I'm not a denier, and I do support green energy, but as I said the other day, I think that the government went about the wrong way. I think that the wind farm project bears so many parallels to HS2. It was just too big, and I think that they went about it the wrong way, and that was unfortunately once the opposition came in. And I think there are people out there who are for the wind farms. I mean, they don't tend to come on to a man in line. And we do always tend to hear the people who are very sceptical about it, but I think the difficulty was that it was a big grand design, and I don't think that enough people were consulted in the early stages, and that was so many parallels to HS2, and it became intensely politicised.
Yeah.
And in the end, it just had to be scrapped.
And let's face it, this is an enormous... Well, if you take the onshore as well as the offshore, these are the biggest things that have ever been built on the Isle of Man.
Yes. I think that's the problem. I think it was just handled a little bit clumsily in the early stages with the location, and also they found, I think, the logistics of just getting the equipment off the in the port, if you like, or to the nearest location and up the hill. I just think, unfortunately, they went about the wrong way. I think if they'd have pursued something like a green living grant, and people were encouraged to do their own thing, put in solar panels, heat pumps, take advantage of the feed-in tariffs that meant utilities, they could have achieved the same thing, but with much less opposition and more public buy-in. And that's where it's key. You've got to have the public on board with this.
Yeah.
You cannot tell them what's happening. They have to buy into it.
Okay.
And
all
that's
right.
Where I think it's failed.
Appreciate it,
okay,
Kevin.
Andy.
Thanks for calling today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Cheers now. 9 minutes to one.
When the man in line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682 631.
John's on now. Hi, John.
Hi, Andy. Ramsey Swing Bridge.
Yeah.
I was born in Ramsey. I can remember when that bridge was opened and closed by two men in the hut in the middle turning a big wheel. Now, I don't know now whether it's electrically driven or hydraulic. I don't really know. But I can go back a long way, let's put it that way. And I think you'll agree that bridge, as far as bridges are concerned, it doesn't look old. It looks reasonably modern.
No, it's a fine-looking bridge, I think.
Yeah, and I've watched it over the years. It's been painted in various colours. It's been illuminated. And it's always been a big feature of Ramsey. You know, it stood out. And now they're dragging their feet on what to do, whether to open it, whether to fix it. They don't know what to do. And let's face it. This government spent the best part of £100 million in Liverpool, and they can't find the money and the expertise to put this bridge right.
This was supposed to be finished in March, John.
Yeah, exactly.
It was
March. It's gone on.
And then it was May, and then it was August, and now they've got no plan for what to do with it.
Yeah. But how can the MHKs for Ramsey look the people of Ramsey in the eye when they're dragging their feet on this? And what the Ramsey commissioners don't seem to be doing anything. What power have they got? This is something that's a big part of Ramsey, just like the Queen's Pier was. And yet they're dragging their feet and doing nothing when they waste money on God knows what.
You don't think this is some sort of plan to just make it pedestrians only?
Yes, but why? Why? All it needs, I mean, over the years, it's had maintenance. Obviously, everything bridge needs maintenance. Now, all of a sudden, it needs a bigger job because they found a hole. So since January, they found a hole, and since January, they've been looking into the hole, wondering what to do. You know, it beggars belief that this government can waste so much money on stupid things when this is such a big part of Ramsey, and it relieves the traffic going out of Ramsey North, because I mean, let's face it, by making Parliament Square traffic lights, all they've done is created big tailbacks, so it needs another exit.
Okay, all right, John, we've got a dash,
okay,
because we've got Phil waiting on the line. Thanks, John, for that. Phil, hi, Phil.
Hi, Andy. Yeah, earlier in the programme, Thurston mentioned an intervention letter that was came up during a debate in Tynwald last week.
Yeah.
What Mr. Clewitt actually said was, during the debate, that he was deeply concerned by a late intervention received by the Chief Minister, directed primarily at myself and Joni Farragher on behalf of a foreign state. I'm chair of Amnesty International on the island. I also helped coordinate the vigils on a Friday, and we discussed this on Friday. Thurston was there as well. Now, one of our members wrote to the Chief Minister over the weekend, and Mr. Cannon's reply was, "I can assure you that no foreign state sought to improperly influence or interfere in the Isle of Man's democratic process. Prior to the debate in question, Tynwald members were subjected to a number of items from Amnesty International, members of the public on both sides of the debate. No correspondence was ever received from a foreign state." Now, this is very worrying, because either Mr. Clewitt was wrong in what he said in Tynwald, or Mr. Cannon is not aware of this correspondence. The fact that no other MHK questioned it during the debate when it came up concerns us, because it suggests they were aware of it when he said it. I understand that in Tynwald, if you refer to a new document or a source of information, it's to be made shared with all those present. We've sent your newsroom our statement about this on Monday, and all news outlets. We really need to get to the bottom of this, because our writing today, our lobbying before, was all open. We sent an open letter to Tynwald members before the debate. Many leaders of the community and religious leaders have spoken out publicly on the issue. But if this intervention, if we have no knowledge of this intervention, and the Chief Minister denied any knowledge of it, it concerns us, because in the interest of transparency and openness, we want to know if this letter exists, who sent it, and what its intentions were. And we can, if there's no information, we can just start to surmise that it was an attempt to interfere in our political system and influence the outcome of the motion.
And what's your opinion?
But knowing what happens with all, when things like this do reach parliamentary level, there's always lobbying. We know there's lobbying going on from all groups, and we tend not to know much about it at all. But Mr. Clewitt clearly mentioned this in the debate, and the Chief Minister has denied it. And if such a letter exists, we would hope, we would love to know what was in it. And then we could find out how much of an influence it was, or how much of a threat it was, if there were threats in it. But if it does exist, there should have been a strongly worded response from the government. Okay. That it's not acceptable.
All right.
You know, that people shouldn't be approaching Tynwald on this. So, as I said, we've sent your newsroom all the information on this, and we would like to get to the bottom of it and find out whether this letter exists or not.
I appreciate your call today, Phil. Thanks for calling today.
Thank you.
Well, we'll certainly try and get to the bottom of that. I live in England, says Sean. We have the same issue with placements for apprenticeships in England. If they had a referendum on net zero, says John in Ramsey, it's my belief that it will be in favour, even if the Isle of Man only contributed 1%. We tried to help to save the planet, says concerned Big John. Well, that's it. Thanks for calling today. If you didn't get on, I'm sorry. If I didn't read your message, we'll try and get it tomorrow. And thanks to Chris on the phones today. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. WINT.